We're ready for another edition of You Ought to Know. Toby Edmonds, I'm thinking you've had a chance to store a couple of topics together. What would you like to talk about today?
You know, speaking of 70-degree weather, what I was doing yesterday was painting my bathroom. And we're going through this, a little bit of a remodel with some tiling and painting. And so yesterday when it was way into the 70s and I'm stuck in my bathroom painting and it's just hot, I'm thinking to myself, you know, at what point in time do I not do these self-improvement projects and just suck it up and hire a professional to do it? So today I figured we'd talk about when to do something on your car by yourself.
Right.
Or when to hire a professional.
Well, perfect, because I'm just thinking about that right now. go ahead. So do you have some general guidelines to offer?
You know, people do ask us this question every now and then. Well, is this something I can do myself? And my answer to that question is always, well, that kind of depends upon you, because I don't know that person's skill level. You know, there are a lot of jobs that you could do yourself, and it doesn't require a lot of skill necessarily, just some kind of some basic knowledge. Replacing your air filter, that's definitely something that, you know, a lot of people could do themselves. I'd say probably 85% of vehicles, the engine, the air filter housing is right on top, very easy to access. You undo some couple of clips, and you're in there. So, you know, doing something like that yourself, totally feasible. Most people are totally capable of handling it. Then you can kind of get into some jobs that are not necessarily technically savvy. You know, I mean, it's not, you know, too terribly technical. It's just kind of a little bit of a pain to do. So, you know, those jobs are more often things like water pumps, you know, some suspension work, some steering work, things like tie rod ends, control arms. Once you start getting into that kind of stuff, though, you know, it's just a lot nicer to have a lift than trying to do it on a ground or on the ground or on a pair of jack stands. So they're not too terribly technical, but then it starts to come down to, you know, is this really how I want to spend my weekend? And then there are other jobs that are not only technical, but they also require a lot of special tools. Can you eventually maybe do it with or without a special tool? And that's kind of dependent upon the job. But for the most part, they're called special tools for a reason. And they're either required to do the job or they make the job about 10 billion times easier. So, you know, it kind of depends upon the job and your skill level and what you're willing to deal with. But really what it comes down to for me, and I know for a lot of people out there too, especially in, when it's summertime in Alaska, is that how I really want to spend my weekends.
Right. And so we're coming up with a couple of interesting, maybe general tools to use to decide whether it's something that is going to be doable by the individual or whether you want to have someone else. I guess I come up with, I'm thinking, as you were talking, I was thinking about the times that I've done some things myself and brought it or brought in someone who's a specialist or whatever. The first thing that I think about these days now is, what am I talking about in terms of dollars saved? Is it a large amount of money? Just how much would it cost me to have someone else do it? Because I find that sometimes when I actually pin that down, I get a number on it, then I say, oh, okay. Okay, now I know what I'm talking about. Is it $20 or is it $200 or is it $1,000? And so I ask that question first. And then the second one I come up with is to be as realistic as possible, can I do it? You know, is it something that I have the skills to do or not? Because even though I've done a variety of things, many listeners have done a variety of things, there are some things that would require quite a bit of learning curve. in order to, say, remove your own appendix or something. Yes.
Yes. You know, and sometimes that's a very good analogy, is do you want to remove your own appendix?
Right.
And that's where it comes back to is like I said, could you do your own air filter? You know what? Yeah. But sometimes for a lot of people, it comes down to, they'll be getting an oil change and, we'll recommend an air filter because it's really dirty and dusty. And people go, oh, no, I can do it myself. Sure. No, that's cool. We understand. Absolutely. And then they come back in 6 months later. And you know what? That air filter is still sitting in there. And it's even dirtier and it's even dustier.
Sure.
And what it came down to is can that person do that engine air filter themselves? Absolutely. But lots of times what I think in most people fall into this trap, and, I'm guilty of it too. I have a light bulb that has been out on my car for like 3 months now. And I keep telling myself I need to pull it in and change out my light bulb. And something just keeps coming up, something else, something more important.
Right.
Something that I'd rather be doing. So, it's a simple little light bulb. It would take me maybe, because it is kind of one of the more hard to reach ones, but still, it would still maybe take me 15, maybe 20 minutes to change out this bulb. It's not really that big of a deal. But at the same point in time, like I said, something just always seems to come up.
Sure.
And as a result, I still have that burnt out light bulb. So, it's can you do the job yourself? Yes. But as you pointed out, for the $20 or whatever that it's going to save you, sometimes it just comes down to let's just have somebody else do it, take care of it, be over and done with it, and then I can move on with my life.
And then, of course, these days there's the other thing. When we talk about do I have the skills, it may be that a person has basic skills, but the question is the particular thing you're looking to do has some strange things that you should do in a particular order, for example. And that's where what I'm wondering if we have two contrasting forces at work. One, things seem to are becoming more complicated. They have not only a mechanical but very often an electronic dimension to them. But in addition to that, it seems also that they're more and more available to walk you step by step, if you choose to do it, of the things that you need to do in order to make it happen. The list of tools, and then saying, okay, go in here and do this way, reach behind, and so on, with even a video that shows you how to do that. So you then become focused on that last question, which is, am I going to get pleasure out of doing this for the given amount of time that I'm putting into it?
Right. How big of a pain in the rump is this going to be is how I generally put it.
Right.
And that's where I found myself kind of kicking myself over the weekend is it was a beautiful weekend. And
yes, it was.
I was stuck in my bathroom painting it, and it was hot and it was sweaty and it was like, man, I can't believe I'm actually choosing to spend a weekend, one of my, very few weekends or in Alaska where it's just unbelievably gorgeous out, and I'm stuck in my bathroom cleaning it. I mean, in my bathroom painting it.
Sure.
And so it was kind of, and of course when it comes to some projects, a lot of people, they choose to think they remember the end product, or they remember like the actual the last couple steps. They forget about a lot of the prep work and a lot of the procedure beforehand that goes into it and how time-consuming that can be. I mean, for me, when it came down to painting my bathroom, it took me less than an hour to paint my bathroom, but what took me almost 2 hours was all the prep work behind it.
Sure.
And, and as you pointed out, with a lot of car repairs, there are procedures that go behind it, and there is a lot of prep work that goes into it. And, when you're getting down to that one part, if you take, something off in the wrong sequence, or maybe you're unfamiliar with a particular trick to that job or to that vehicle, and then you kind of get yourself stuck in a situation where you can't, or it goes back together wrong, and then you're stuck with a vehicle that's not running right now. or you created a bigger problem than what you had in the first place because you were unfamiliar with the procedure for taking it apart and putting it back together. And that is something very common, too. We get vehicles towed in on a regular basis because people either started to take it apart and realized that, hey, nope, this isn't going to work, or they did take it apart, put it back together, and now the vehicle isn't running. Or now the vehicle is running, but something terrible happened. There's a really large, loud noise, and then the vehicle stopped running. And that happens quite a bit, too.
Sure.
In fact, we have a vehicle coming in on Tuesday to replace a rear main seal that somebody else had already attempted to try and replace and had put it back together wrong, torqued some bolts down that didn't necessarily need to be torqued down that tight, and now the clutch won't disengage.
Oh, okay. You can go. Okay. Oh.
So not only was there probably at least a good weekend, you know, spent taking care of that, but... And so now you're dealing with time lost, but now you have to pay for the tow bill now, too, to get somebody else to fix it. So, you know, it really does come down to, I mean, is my skill set really this advanced, or am I just choosing to think that it is just because I want to save a little bit of money?
Right. Well, and as a case in point, you and I had talked about repair to a passenger side window. And I've learned more about what are called regulators than I ever had known and perhaps wanted to know. Because with the advent a long time ago of power windows, there was also the question of repairing that window so that you could run the window up and down smoothly. And over time, apparently, by the way, interestingly enough, I was speaking with someone else who had an older car, which actually was a wind-up, turn-the-handle window, and had a problem with a regulator as well. The problem there was, though, with my vehicle, you could remove the panels and remove this strange device that had cables and all to replace it. In his case, the panel didn't come off, and the equipment that was part of the moving the window up and down was actually not bolted, but sort of permanently affixed to a portion of the door. And so I realized that, okay, he and I were both looking at, well, shall we do this? And how long is it going to take? And who would do it if, you know, there are two or three different approaches to having someone remove the panel and replace the regulator. The regulator itself, apparently, not that expensive when you can find a new one for relatively low price. But we're talking about almost 10 times as much as the price of the item to get to it and replace it.
Yeah, and at that point in time, what you're talking about is that person's regulator was probably riveted in.
Yes.
And
yes.
And that actually is fairly common on a lot of window regulators. There's quite a few Volkswagens that are the same way. And I mean, you're right at that point. You know, lots of people are. You know, I mean, they're technically savvy enough to where they're completely capable of taking off a door trim panel or maybe some other component in order to get to the broken part. And where the problem lies is not so much necessarily in the procedure that is involved in getting down to that part, but what do you do once you get down to that part? And as in the case of that particular vehicle, they found that it was riveted in place. And, you know, once again, not necessarily a deal breaker for some people, but things that are riveted into place are, they do kind of add a certain element of complication to the procedure, to the repair process. So, like I said, it comes down to being familiar with the job that you're performing and whether or not you're capable or well-tooled enough to deal with every aspect of it, not just in the tear down process to that point. Because it's once you tear down to a lot of these parts, it's a whole nother procedure just to remove it from its location.
Right. Oh my. So, just to finish off the regulator, story, do we find that regulators are, or what kind of thing can we say about regulators? How often do they fail?
Well, first of all, I think we do need to clarify for a lot of people, a window regulator is the part that sits in your door.
Right.
And it attaches to it sits in between the sheet metal and the door trim panel, and it attaches to the bottom of the window glass.
Right.
And when you either crank the handle or when you press the button, it will either involve a series of cables, or it will actually act kind of like a scissor mechanism, and it will raise and lower your window. That's
right.
What we mean when we say a window regulator.
Right.
And actually, as you can probably imagine, window regulators go out fairly often on vehicles of a certain age. Is it something that we see on brand new vehicles? No. Generally, we see it on vehicles anywhere between 5 and 10 years old. And it could be for a number of different reasons. Volkswagens in particular, Volkswagens and Audis, and pretty much any type of manufacturer that uses a cabling system for raising and lowering the window, we see those a little bit more frequently than the scissor style. The scissor style is completely mechanical, and as long as nothing binds up, as long as nothing pops off of the mechanism, or as long as that window motor stays active and healthy, there isn't really a lot of reason to be replacing that style.
Okay.
The style that we see most often is going to be the one that involves the cables, because those cables frequently will either bind up or they will break or somehow fail.
Well, one of the things that was mentioned also, and this is kind of an interesting question I throw at you, is this is a moving part in there, whether it's scissoring or cabling or whatever. But this is a pretty much sealed area in that door that you can't get into to lubricate. So once you put it together, whatever lubrication or way of ensuring that it moves freely is there. Is that part of the problem?
No, possibly, but I really think the majority of the problem is that we're very much so a society that loves drive-through windows. And we also happen to live in a state where ice builds up on windows quite frequently.
Okay.
And I think that most often when I see window regulator failures, it's as a result of somebody repeatedly unrolling their windows when the glass is frozen to the window seal. And they're, there's a lot of button pushing and some banging and trying to get the window to go down so they can get their cup of coffee or breakfast or whatever have you going through a drive-through window. And sometimes the weakest point in that system that gives away before that glass rolling up and down is that cable or that window regulator.
Okay.
So more often than not, we see a lot of window regulators in the wintertime as a result of maybe some people rolling down their windows and being a little bit more forceful about it than what they really should.
Okay.
Another part of it is, and as you can imagine, the majority of the ones that we do see fail are driver side window regulators. Because those probably the one that gets the most use. So it's, I don't think it's necessarily an issue of lack of lubrication as it is. It's just they get old and they get worn and they are abused a lot of times, used in a manner in which they probably shouldn't be used. So, and lots of times too, especially and I'm guilty of it too, I like to keep my car on the cleaner side. And so I will go through the car wash, and doors are not 110% waterproof. They still get moisture down in there. So you know, you get some moisture down in there, and you let it freeze, and then you try to use your window regulator, and that can cause some problems too. So it's really I think it's kind of a combination of factors that will cause window regulators to fail. And I can tell you this though, when they do fail, it's usually very, very inconvenient. the window will get stuck down, and it's usually like negative 30 outside, and it's dark, and your window won't roll back up, and it's extremely frustrating. I mean, chances are that's when it's going to happen. So, you know, and you were lucky enough to find out that your window regulator had failed or was failing when it was warmer out, and you were in a position to where you could do something about it. But the ones that I see, they're stuck in the down position, and it's the middle of winter.
Right. And at that point, and especially if you're, well, that's the interesting thing. Once you get it up, you can leave it up. That's one solution, and not use it, work around it. But especially in the wintertime, that becomes, or any time, it puts more pressure, as we were talking about earlier on in this whole program, about more quickly making the decision or making the time to fix it. And that's the other factor to throw in here, I guess, in the decision process. How badly do you need it done? What's the time factor involved, whether you end up saying, I'm just going to take it to someone and pay the bill and have it fixed?
And absolutely, you know, and I tell this to my people all the time, and I think I've said it on the show once before too, cars don't have problems, people have problems. And, you know, I think that really plays into a lot of people's decisions on how they prioritize work that needs to be done to their vehicle, is what is causing me a problem at this particular moment in time. And I can't tell you how many times we've had cars brought in for things like the radio doesn't work, or the charging port or the cigarette lighter in their dash won't work and they can't charge their phone. Meanwhile, their suspension is clunking and about ready to fall off, and they have a check engine light that's been on for 6 months.
Right.
And
so
it comes down to, that's how people prioritize repairs, because it's based upon what is currently causing me a problem. You know, not being able to unroll my window, that's a problem for somebody. Well, so is that clunking suspension and that check engine light. It just hasn't necessarily manifested yet.
Okay, well, thank you for calling in today. we've laid out the ground, and now we have the map before people. If they choose to, they can follow whichever path they want. Works for them. Okay, Toby, finishing up here, last comments.
Just as always, if you have any questions, any concerns, any problems about your vehicle, we are here to help. Edmunds Import Auto, down by the Alaska State Fairgrounds, next to the Noisy Goose Cafe. We speak your car's language.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Toby Edmunds. Have a good day.
Nope. You too, Mike. Bye-bye.